There comes a time in everyone's life when the world seems to be so large and your life so small. Life can close in and leave you lost and feeling alone, especially if there are health issues or financial strife that appear to be out of control. You're not alone, or are you, without hope or answers? All you have to do is take a moment to clear your thoughts and mind. Open your heart and receive God's love. The grace of God and the sacrifices of Jesus are right here for your ability to enjoy your life free of pain and suffering. The Holy Spirit is just waiting for you to ask for God's love and the grace over your life. This internet radio show is here for just this purpose: to enlighten, empower each and every one of you who seek such peace and harmony in your life. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Huckaday is here to assist in your quest for salvation and God's grace. Welcome to the Abiding Presence Internet Radio Show. Today's date: the 14th day of July. The year is 2015. It's about 2 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock Central Daylight Savings Time here in the central part of the United States of America. Tonight's broadcast has some significance, some distinction to it. It is our 199th broadcast. Now, about 60-something shows, about 60 weeks were done, well, 30 to 60 weeks were done by driving into Tulsa to a radio station and using all of their broadcast equipment. But obviously the overwhelming majority of time served has been here on the ranch at the home place in the barn. And so next Tuesday night is our 200th show. So during the broadcast tonight, Jim and I are trying to think of things to make next week's 200th show special. And we encourage you to let us know what you think with text messages and emails, how to celebrate next week's 200th show, which will be the 21st of July. So if you listen to the show pre-recorded during the week or on the archives, you may want to make a special note to join us, to celebrate with us next week's 200th show. Tonight, we're going to talk about a combination of previous topics discussed on the show, but we're going to blend them together in a new way. We've talked about choices, how you have to make choices, and we've talked about how there's this world, the reality of our bodies and the flesh, and we've talked about how there's nothing good of the flesh or the world, and how we are spirit beings encapsulated in a worldly body. And we've also talked about how it's up to each one of us to develop a relationship with the guys and to enjoy grace in our lives. And we've also talked about the quote-unquote saying the trees for the forest, to look farther than just what's right in front of your nose, not just to consider your actions of tonight or what you're going to do tomorrow, but what about 6 months to a year or 2 or 3 years down the line? Where do you see yourself? What kind of goals do you have? We've talked about all these things. Well, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to put these in a bucket. We're going to take a shovel and we're going to stir them around, mix them up. Because there's actual scripture that has already stirred it up and mixed it up. And it has to do with perhaps the decisions you're willing to make. Perhaps the choices you believe you have, there's no other way to put it, are wrong. Are influenced not by the devil. The devil isn't making you do anything. That isn't sinful thoughts influencing you. But the choices that you feel you have and the decisions that you feel that you have to make, as whether it's heaven or hell, a spirit-filled, grace-enjoyed life, or just a life of a relationship with the guys and enjoying grace and having prayers answered, is like a carrot on a stick dangling in front of you. You move, it moves, and you never get any closer. Perhaps it's because you don't see other choices. You're not looking at yourself or your life or your existence from the perspective of change, of Christian development, of a point of view that is salt and peppered all through Scripture, that literally talks about discarding, casting away, ignoring, setting aside, overlooking, turn the other cheek, repent. There's all kinds of little hints and nuances and safety tips about what we're going to discuss tonight. And just to let you know, the email is open. It's the name of the radio show, The Abiding Presence, at the letter G, gmail.com. We have our texting is up. We haven't received any texts yet. If you'd like to send a text message to the show, all you do is the first word you type is the word grace, then the rest of your message, and when you press the send button, all you do is put in the numbers 69302. The ways to be a part of the show and contact the show are on the Abiding Presence website on the contacts page. We like text messages. We like emails. Jim, did I explain this okay for you, how we're going to talk about this tonight?
Yeah, I was going to say and add to it, some of the things I was thinking about had to do with, like if I posed a couple questions to you right now, is it possible that in your life right now you feel really encumbered, kind of stressed, feeling like you're locked in to whatever you're doing, to the point where the time that you spend on what you're doing and the things that you're locked into keep you from God? Is it possible your life is so busy? Do you have a lot of extracurricular activities and things to do so that even when you had time or should have time to relax and get your mind quiet and where your heart could really find God, that you don't have that time because you have made choices throughout your life that cause you to literally be running back and forth and feel like you're meeting yourself coming and going? Another example would be, BJ, the other day, my mom was talking and the girls, we were talking about some things and they were just sharing about a few things that they had going on their plate, so to speak. And my mom just kind of shook her head and said, "Wow, I've just got a simple life. I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what you're talking about."
Right.
And it was a great comment because it basically summed up, "Wow, you guys are just kind of inundated with a lot of extra stuff, or you're interested in things beyond what I'm interested in, you know. And my life, therefore, is simple. And it's possible you're making your choices and things are more difficult. So see, perspective then is everything. Because in the midst of making choices, you know, we've said this a long time ago, and it's something that when I say on the show, I mean, I'm staring at myself in the face while I'm saying it, but the look on people's face is not happy while I'm saying it, which is, you know, if you find, however you find your life to be right now, it's your choice. Because people argue with you and say, well, no, it's not. I have to do these things.
No, they don't.
And the real truth is, you never had to do them. You actually made choices and chose to be right where you're at, doing what you're doing, and doing it in the way that you're doing it. And when I say that, number one, I'm staring at myself in the face in a mirror. But number two, you should see the way that people look. Because they don't want to really admit to those kind of thoughts. So that's kind of what stirred me up to want to talk about some of these things, because I don't think that people even, it doesn't usually cross the minds of most folks when they're making the choices they're making that this could be a really bad choice.
Somebody that's had a bad stroke, a heart attack, heart surgery, an organ transplant, they're a paraplegic, they've been in a horrific accident and their body just doesn't participate anymore.
Right.
Something that takes the quote unquote normal the way I used to be.
Okay.
That you're never healed. You're just not the same person you used to be. Whatever it is, prison for some people will do that. Those people see the uselessness of civilization and society's requirements and goals. I used to run a ranch for a woman who had a pretty good stroke. Her smile was a little crooked.
Hmm.
Her words, she kind of had a little lisp a little bit sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And every once in a while, her eyes would kind of get a little, you know, weird looking.
Sure.
You know, and she was a little weak on one side of her body. And I actually rigged a pulley system in the barn where she could tie her horse in the alleyway of a barn, and with a push of a button, a little electric winch lowered her saddle on her horse.
Oh.
Because she couldn't lift the saddle up on the horse anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I made it so the saddle lowered and raised for her horse. And you can call it what you want. You don't care. It doesn't matter. It's not important. It's a waste of time, a waste of money. It basically boils down to that when you've crossed this threshold,
right,
to either a near-death experience or life as you know it is done and over, never to return.
Right.
Not even close to what it was. You realize how much time you wasted.
Yeah.
And how many things you thought were serious and important. And the way you prioritized your choices. And the way you lived your life and what you focused on. But more importantly and sadly, what you blew off and ignored is really a gut-wrenching experience.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, who cares if you don't open the mail? What's it really matter?
Right.
It's still going to be there. Who cares if I pay $10 for a late fee? What does it really matter what my credit rating is? Honestly. You know, you get this perspective of where you start to see people as rats in a maze. Going after a chunk of cheese. And they don't realize they're chasing their own tail and that they're in a puzzle. And you can't really identify this with this until you've had it.
Right.
Well, Scripture brings this up as far as choices are concerned.
Right.
Look at Adam and Eve. What was their punishment of perspective?
Right.
Of what their life is, what reality. You're in the Garden of Eden where you want for nothing and you're walking with God, and then all of a sudden, with one single commandment, heaven's gone.
Sure.
And your reality, your life, and the choices that you now face are completely 180 degrees in the other direction. Look at Job. What did Job truly lose but a perspective of what was important and real? I mean, he didn't have a tumor. He didn't lose a leg. He lost his reality.
You could say he lost a position too.
He lost the world that he knew to be real was gone. And eventually his faith in the guys, it was replaced with a better one. All the way around. So you could almost say that the reason a lot of prayers aren't answered is because you're truly wanting, needing, and praying for things that are part of a perspective that has nothing to do with Christ. That will do nothing but anchor you in a false sense of security.
Right, right.
In a reality. Why would Grace want to grant a prayer of a prescription drug working? Because if the prescription drug masks the pain and suffering and you feel okay, a lot of people would stop trying to find grace.
Right.
Because a lot of people don't look for grace and they don't think about God until what?
Yeah, something's wrong.
All else fails.
Right.
Doctors can't fix me. Medication can't fix me. They say I'm going to die. Okay, I've tried everything. I might as well try Jesus. That's the way a lot of people feel. And
well, those are the choices that are being made now more than those to go with God.
Well, and that perspective and that way of living is truly passed down to children.
Yeah.
From parents and grandparents.
Yeah, when you don't have a reality that's worth anything, it's easier to shed it and then find what's right. When you do have a reality that's actually okay, and by the world's standard it's great, well, what would you need God for? And see, those are the comments that Jesus makes constantly through his Gospels, where he would say things like, it's easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to make it into heaven. And of course, the disciples would say, well, then who can make it? And then he'd go on and to share. It's the lust for the things of the world, and it's the money and the life that people are living that they can't let go of to find God.
The listeners, well, they wouldn't know this, but not every show, but pretty frequently, most times when you first get to the ranch and we're enjoying our snacks, good choice tonight, by the way.
Yep.
I did call you and say, dazzle me.
Yeah.
And so you picked good snacks. But we'll talk about life as we know it being over, government overthrown, zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Jade Helm. We'll talk about
survival
and stuff. And tonight I made a comment. I said, the one group of people who are perfectly trained to survive a a made-for-TV movie catastrophic life as we know it is over is a homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
They have nothing to lose.
Right.
They're already in survival mode.
Sure.
They know where to find food. They know where to find shelter, water. They have nothing to lose. But a family of four, a son, a daughter, and a husband and a wife who are middle class or upper middle class that are expected, you know, to use their Discovery card or go to Walmart and have cable TV and central air conditioning, they're in a tough spot.
Sure.
Because they don't know what it means to be without.
Right.
Well, how many people, and by the way, just to be really, to let you know how I feel about this, I fall into this category. A lot of people don't even consider there is a God until the stuff hits the fan and their life is over. Hi, my name is BJ Rickard. I fall into this category. I had to be a paraplegic. I had to be paralyzed from the waist down before I would even let anybody talk to me about whether God was real or not. So, I really understand how difficult it is,
sure,
for people to turn their backs on, quote unquote, the life they're living.
Yeah. I got a story here. People will appreciate this. It's over in Mark chapter 10, and verse 46 is where it starts. In fact, this is the guy that Jesus said, go home to. Okay, his name was Bartimaeus. You may have another name for him. But it says, now they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples, a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Then many warned him to be quiet, but he cried out all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. So Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. Then they called the blind man, saying to him, be of good cheer, rise, he is calling you. And this is the point I wanted to make. We know that he got healed, but notice what it says in verse 50. And throwing aside his garment, he rose and came to Jesus. Now, back in that day, those that were begging actually wore certain types of clothes. Just like those that were upper-classed, they wore certain types of clothes.
You could tell who somebody was.
Yes, very much so. In fact, these garments that he had were garments that pretty well identified him as someone in need. Someone that would beg. Someone that would have no problem asking someone else for money. Notice when he knew Jesus was calling him,
right,
what's the first thing that he did? Throwing aside his garment. In other words, look at what he did. I'm done with this reality. He's calling me. I'm going to get my healing. I'm going to have a change of life. Now, this is very different from the status quo, quote-unquote, salvation experience of most people today in the religious organizations of where worship has taken place. When they come to Christ, there's pretty much nothing that changes in their life at all.
No.
But this man, in order to come to Christ, he actually got rid of everything that identified him of his previous reality. A reality change took place right here.
I really don't understand why. I'm sure some do. I just am ignorant to it when it occurs because I don't participate. I don't go and I don't know these people. But mathematically, it happens. I just don't understand why it doesn't happen on a massive, more openly public level. And that is this. You seek out some type of a connection with God, Jesus, grace, Holy mm-hmm. Spirit, something. And someone convinces you or invites you to get all dressed up on a Sunday morning and go to Sunday service at 10 a.m. And you go to a couple of them. And maybe you throw in a Wednesday night and maybe a Friday night potluck dinner. And eventually, you are in a position where they're going to say, you're reborn, you're saved. Or your goal is to become saved, to become reborn. And at that juncture, there comes a time when people shake your hand and hug you and congratulate you and say, we're family now. You're my brother, you're my sister. We're all blessed. That it becomes officially that you're saved.
Okay.
That you are officially reborn. You're a Christian now. But yet, you're the same. You talk the same, you dress the same. You do the same things. The same things occur.
Right.
Any issues or problems that perhaps were a motivator or catalyst for you to look towards grace are there, still around.
Right.
Financial aches, pains, personal, career, whatever, they're there. So that you really, truly have no tangible proof to show or to prove to someone that you are saved, that you have been reborn.
Right.
You have nothing to show for it. And as time goes on, more and more of your life and the time spent in an organized religion, they seem to gel together.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to go together like peanut butter and jelly. So after a while, it's just all mixed together.
Sure.
And other than pomp and circumstance and time served on a Sunday morning, what do you really have to show for
sure
that there is even a God and you have a connection with Him? So subsequently, and this is proven back in the time when Jesus walked around, they're really the parables, the stories of the blind seeing and the what's that skin disease? You know, the one that
leprosy.
Leprosy's gone, and they're brought back to life, and they can walk and talk and hear. They were like a prepackaged, pre-cooked meal. They had thawed themselves out. They had taken themselves out of the package, and they had put themselves in the pan, so that all Jesus really had to do was heat and serve.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing to prepare or cook.
Sure.
In other words, they came with an open heart and an open mind.
Right.
They had already decided that as real as their life is, it's not doing them any good.
Right.
It's not going anywhere.
Sure.
So I believe, I have faith, I have conviction and commitment that I want a God-like life, a reality. And this is where I have to go and what I have to do to achieve it. Those are the quote-unquote successful stories of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Because the flip side to that is why somebody that had ailments and infirmities and wasn't healed by Jesus. Because Jesus never said, it's me. He always said what?
It's the Father.
It's my dad.
Yep.
It's my dad through me.
Yeah.
I'm just the messenger.
Right.
Message from home.
Yeah, I think that people are greatly hindered by the masses. It's almost as though in a congregation of people, if there was an outsider that came in that knew absolutely no one, let's say they're from out of town and they just came in because they were drawn to come to the church, and there was a message that morning that preached about the salvation that a person can have through Christ, that individual making a choice at that moment, he's making his own individual choice because he doesn't know anybody. It's not a part about being in the Christian family.
Right.
Being a part of this church for 10 years, and now he's finally going to make a choice for God after he's learned what it means to go nowhere when you do make a choice for God. See, this individual comes from somewhere else. They've been invited their very first time. They don't know anything. They make a choice. And I've seen wonderful things take place.
Well, that was me.
Wonderful, wonderful salvations take place where a person's life is changed amazingly. Now, here's what happens in the congregation of the people. They'll say things because they have to. They have to acknowledge that something wonderful's happened because it has. So they'll say, oh, how wonderful this is. This is so wonderful. Well, and then if that person comes back excited the next week, and if they come back excited the third week, they'll say, well, you know, this is kind of that honeymoon period with Jesus.
Yes, they talk you out of it.
It'll wear off now, you know, all your excitement. It just is very encouraging.
You're new.
But you'll come back down to where, you know, where the rest of us are.
Yeah.
Or you'll have someone that's been around the rest of them, and when they come to Christ, really wanting to come to Christ, it's tainted because they see what the outcome is before they even come.
Right.
You know, this is the part of trying to tell someone that's in a quote-unquote youth group, you need to have more of God, when having God at all means just coming to a service and being bored out of your mind.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, how's that youth, with all the exciting things that this world presents to them, think that anything about that is like what I want to do?
I literally outgrew the organization and building that I met you in.
Right.
And I knew that I'd outgrown it when I had a private meeting with the head pastorizer of the place, you remember, had a meeting with him, and I asked him a question, and he says, well, he says, it's nice to see you helping people. You've helped a couple people in the congregation with your prayers. And I says, yeah, he says, it always works. And he says, it does. It seems to always work. And I looked at him, and I said, well, I don't understand. I'm brand new, and my prayers always work. How come yours don't, and this is your place? And that was the end of the conversation.
Hmm.
And I just literally asked it innocently, like, you know, what's the story here?
Mm-hmm.
I literally outgrew the place because I was going. And I'd look around a room full of people, and I'd say they're holding hands and they're singing songs, and there's 260 people in this room. And there's only three people that have a connection with the guys. This is, you know, I might as well go home and have some cold pizza and get back to work on the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's not impossible, but why would someone choose to have a go nowhere, stagnant, shift the truck into park relationship with Christ? Who would choose such a thing?
Well, people choose it all the time if they don't really have any.
I think they choose anyone, it because they don't really have a good connection to begin with.
Well, that plus they're surrounded by that's what it is. That's what they see other people that have been in it for a long time. And it just rubs off on them, sure. I think it's the way that they identify. And this is why we're talking about what we are. You know, it's a perspective, and people's perspective from the very beginning can get off. And if it's off from the beginning, then it's going to be off completely in the end.
We got to catch up on emails.
Okay.
This one came in three. And folks, we need some emails here. We need some text messages. This one came in 3 days ago. It says, your show emphasizes the personal relationship with God and points out if you are missing something, this is your problem. I personally appreciate not being told God doesn't talk to people, and if you want to continue coming to our building, don't talk about that. They say that, don't they? It says, yeah, we walked. So I feel like you are simply confirming everything we already experienced, but urged us to take it farther until every prayer was answered, and we acknowledged / experienced grace all the time. Hope this helps. Oh, the Weaver family of Bixby, Oklahoma. Yeah.
Nice.
That's nice. Did they show up last Wednesday?
No, they weren't there.
They weren't?
Nope.
We got another email that came in 2 days ago. I just wanted to let you know. Thank you. I received the prayer cloth yesterday. Did you mail out a prayer cloth?
Uh-huh.
You did?
Yeah.
It says, hope the family and BJ are well.
No money involved.
Much love, Matthew J.
Mm-hmm.
Really? You sent something out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was it? Like a dishcloth or paper towel?
No,
or
just like a handkerchief, part of a handkerchief, you know, square.
Was it like freshly laundered?
Yeah, it wasn't dirty.
Okay, we got an email that came in 20 hours ago. You can read this on the radio if you like. Hi, Jim and BJ. I like the show, and I am in number 83 in the archives. Remember, tonight's 199. Next week is 200.
Right.
Archive. Hour cometh, and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. He says it's John 4.23.
Right.
And then it says, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Lots of teachings and differing opinions been set in the building about worship God in spirit and truth. Can you, Jim and BJ, explain how you understand worship in spirit and truth? Thank you. This is from Roman in Pasco, Washington. Jim?
Well, first of all, I would say that you really want to define or open up your heart to a bigger conception of what worship means. In other words, what we think worship means is just being in a place where everybody's singing a worship song, or we're in a time where everybody lifts your hands and then says wonderful things to God about how you love him. And now, I enjoy both. I enjoy singing nice songs. I enjoy a time to just reflect about my love and appreciation to God. But I believe what he's saying there, I believe worship has to do with the choices you make in your life. Worship is your life. And does your life represent a life of Christ? Does it represent a life of the Spirit? Does it represent the fact that you choose God when you could choose the doctor? You choose God when you could choose the opinion of man? You choose God when everybody's going against the way that you see it, and you're being tugged on to go with them, but you choose God. To me, that's the life of worship. That's worshiping God in the Spirit.
I like that. The closer you become with grace, the more you experience grace. The less you pray, because the less wants and needs you have,
mm-hmm.
the less wants and needs of the flesh, the body, and of this world you recognize as being something you should even care or be concerned about. Because you realize that you are a spirit being, not a human being.
Correct.
I worship the guys by taking advantage of grace whenever I can, whether it concerns me or someone else. I worship the guys by acknowledging grace in everyday life wherever I'm at, and being having fun looking for grace, having a ball witnessing grace, and then being thankful for being entertained and connected and seeing it. It's kind of like going over to somebody's house and you're happy to see them, you're enjoying their food, and they've got a great place for you to spend the night, So you just keep saying across the board, everything is great, everything's perfect, thank you, I couldn't wait to get here, and I'm going to hate to leave. That is the way I worship.
I like what you said when you said that, help me put it together again. You said, I'm entertained and I'm enjoying seeing it, or something like that.
I'm entertained and I enjoy seeing grace work that has nothing to do with me. I'm literally just a bystander.
I wanted to say that again because that's the kind of a statement that I want people to hear, because that says there is a whole new reality, a whole different reality than the way that you do what you do.
You really have, if you really want to know you're on the right track, if you really want a tangible confirmation that God is real and that you are on the road to communicating with the guys like we communicate with each other tonight, is to see grace everywhere and to see grace doing things.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a bird that a gust of wind picks it up out of the way of getting hammered by a car on a highway, and you think, I can't believe that car didn't hit that bird. Well, mm-hmm. that's grace.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there's too much water and the sun comes out, or too much sun and it finally rains, that's grace. There's always a positive, pleasing, across-the-board row of dominoes falling when it comes to grace. And to witness that and have, and not to benefit from it other than just to be observant.
You know, Paul made the comment. He said, where sin abounds, grace abounds much more.
Yes.
And if you look back to Adam and Eve's choice, it was, I want my eyes opened to good and evil. At the present time, their eyes were only open to good. So in the midst of such a negative world, to see these positive nuances of God everywhere is entertaining and joyful.
You can literally be in an Indian casino watching people get drunk and waste their hard-earned money and go into debt, and grace is right there with them. The fact that people think that maybe a nightclub where they serve alcohol and women dance around and take their clothes off for the entertainment of men, internet pornography, an Indian casino, a liquor store, that there are certain places on this planet that you can go, that there are certain activities that you can be a part of, and that grace isn't right there, that's stupid. That's where grace is really powerful, to show that in a heartbeat, you can turn it around.
Sure.
That you can be in the most terrible spot of your life.
That's God's love and mercy right
you
there.
Can be in the worst. You can choose to be in the worst building, doing the worst things on the worst day of your life, and in the blink of an eye, grace is there to rise you up out of it like it never happened.
Yeah.
Because why else is there such emphasis on all sins are forgiven?
Yeah.
Ask and you shall receive. Because otherwise what you're saying is, the power of this world and the creativity and power of the human body and mind can trump the ability of God's power and love to open up any door of any building. Does that even make sense?
Hmm.
So the worst place on the battlefield,
sure,
the deepest, darkest corner of your mind, there's actually more grace there.
Right.
To trump, to supersede, to overpower. As the darker it gets, the lighter the shining of God's love is in that instance.
Yeah, Paul said he prayed his prayer and God said to him, because he wanted help in an area that Paul was finding himself weak in, and when he prayed, God said, "My grace is sufficient for you in your weakness, for when you're weak, then I'll make you strong." So notice where grace had the most, where you could avail grace in a greater quantity. It was in a place of your weakness, which says what? When you're walking by your own ability is when you limit what grace can do. But when you're to a place where you can't, that's when grace can. Yeah.
We got a really fun email here.
Okay.
We haven't had these, and it came in 9 minutes ago. This is from Chris. It says, "You did this on a show a few months ago. Can I ask? A female boxer that's 10 years old, what's her age in people?" Okay.
Can I guess?
Yeah, please do. 10-year-old dog.
59 years of age.
You're close. You're really close. How are you so close? Because you remember what I told you?
Muffin's 9, I think he is.
Yeah.
And I think he's like 55.
Okay, folks, what you have to realize is, although humans live, and remember, we provide you with all kinds of useful information on this show.
Like candy and...
Yeah, candy, snacks,
music,
sound effects. Now we're talking about dog-to-people years. Although humans live approximately about 7 times as long as most breeds of dogs, the old wives' tale of 7 dog years to 1 human year, that really doesn't apply. It's easy to see that a 6-month-old puppy is much more in control of its life than a 6-month-old baby is. Dogs reach peak maturity quickly and slow down, while people age at a much slower pace. In other words, most breeds of dogs are considered adults and fully mature at 2 years of age, where a human body and mind really do not reach full maturity until 25 years of age, which means that at age 3, you're looking at a dog who's all grown up by human standards. The new accepted comparison of ages between dogs and people, a 10-year-old dog is 56 years of age.
Oh, okay.
So you were really close. See, Ranger is 9.5, and 9 years is 52. So, and by the way, folks, I can do this for cats, dogs, and horses. So if you'd like to know what your dog's dog, cat, or horse's age range ratio is to your own,
I'm going to find out how old Muffet is.
Email the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to email the show. You know how to text the show. Let us know. Okay, we got another email here. It says, Grace, what do you think about bad habits, bondage, drag, porn, how to get freedom, your insight? Thanks and best blessings. Well, whether it's bondage or drag or pornography or alcoholism or drugs or you pick your nose and you eat it in public, whatever you have that does more bad for you than good, and hurts you as a person and devalues your own self-worth. It's always like losing weight or like stopping drinking or smoking. It's literally every day it's a battle. Every day it's a conscious decision that when you wake up in the morning, you say, like tonight, you say, okay, tomorrow is the 15th of July, and I'm not going to do this tomorrow. The thing that I wish I didn't do, the bad habit, when tomorrow it stops. My goal tomorrow is to go through the whole day fighting tooth and nail with my own urges that tomorrow I won't do it. Because then when you go to bed at night, you feel really good about yourself. You say, I did it. I made it through the whole day, and I didn't do what I don't want to do or wish I'd like to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when you wake up Thursday morning, you say, okay, I'm going to do exactly what I did today that I did Wednesday so I don't do this. And it's like a small snowball going down a very slight slope. It builds slowly. And before you know it, you're banking hours and you're banking days and then you're banking weeks and then you're banking months. And by the way, this same little recipe is a great way to start accepting Christ into your life and changing the way you look at the world. Is to every day just slowly change.
I was just going to add one thought, and that is, you know, when I made a choice to turn my life over to God, grace, by the grace of God, Jesus came into my life. So there was, I was by myself, but I made a choice, and now God actually is taking up help for me and doing something in my life. Well, you know, the scriptures share with us that in the same way that we started this wonderful relationship with God, you're supposed to walk in the same way. So every one of those choices BJ's talking about, just remember, God's in the middle of that choice. This isn't a choice where you're on your own. This is a choice where grace is there every minute of the day. And as you choose God, as you choose to be more of a spirit, you'll find that grace is there to empower you or strengthen you.
We got a question that came in 5 hours ago.
Okay.
It says, hello, Ranger and Company. I like that. Hello, Ranger and Company.
Put them first.
It says, I have a question for BJ. Oh, not Ranger or you.
Okay.
Okay, it says, BJ, on a show a few weeks ago, you told us how you came to live in Oklahoma. You know, the penny, the roadmap.
Yeah, right.
Closed my eyes, flipped it near. It landed on Sepulpa, Kellyville.
Sepulpa, yeah.
Okay, now that you know the guys, would you do something different? Would you go wherever knowing the guys are always with you? Would you ask the guys for direction or something like the penny or spinning the bottle? Thanks, looking forward to tonight's show. Oh, this is from Diane from Toronto.
Okay, good.
July 4th marked my 19th year in Oklahoma. I lived by July 5th of 1986. I decided I didn't like Oklahoma. I'd been in Oklahoma for less than 24 hours, and I decided I didn't like it. That opinion hasn't changed in 19 years. And this really isn't a like mind-blowing, earth-shattering revelation. Perhaps it is on your show, Jim. But I have made this publicly known in my books that are published, public appearances at horse clinics, my radio show about horses. It's common knowledge that I really don't like Oklahoma. Not because Oklahoma is bad, but I miss higher elevations and tree lines. I like snow-capped mountain peaks. I like streams with ice-cold running water that you can actually drink. And there still are places in this country you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are too many people in Oklahoma for me. I live on hundreds of acres, and I feel like I'm in an apartment or condominium complex. Now, that being said, why have I been in Oklahoma for 19 years? Because Oklahoma, its weather pattern, its population, it's centrally located, that Oklahoma is a very, very good place to be in horses and hay.
Hmm.
I'm here for one reason only, business. I've never made that a secret. The people are nice. I mean, there's two seasons. Either it's summer or it's not.
Yeah.
You know, but Oklahoma has a pretty decent economy. The weather pattern is mild. I mean, I've always lived. I haven't moved because of business reasons.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the guys are concerned, now that I know the guys and I have a relationship with them and I talk with them, I would never waste the time talking about where I should live with the guys. Because it doesn't matter.
Yet if they told you to go somewhere, you'd just go, right?
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say goodbye. I just, me and Ranger,
right.
We'd be gone.
Right, because that's the same way I've done. You know, I'm here for business.
No.
I've been here 10 years longer than you.
I don't know if it's the radio show or the friendship that you and I continue. I mean, we keep getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
We keep, you know, our relationship keeps get closer, building each other. We learn from each other. We make each other frustrated. One of my favorite hobbies, frustrate you. But
it works.
It does. I think so. People are still listening.
Yeah.
Maybe. Hello? Hello? Testing. I would rather be where there's no pavement, there's no highways, and I have to drive an hour and a half to buy a roll of toilet paper and a tube of toothpaste. And my nearest neighbor is a gopher or a deer. And you know, I just want to buy, I just want 1 acre of land next to a large national park or BLM land out in the middle of nowhere where nobody knows where I'm at. Bureau of Land Management, public property, wildlife sanctuary or something.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I get it.
But I'm here for business and making money.
Yeah.
And now there's the show and you, but I don't know if I answered their question the way they wanted it answered, but let's see if we got another one here. Oh, it says kaboom. I love it.
Was that the response?
No, that's from Chris. I think that's the response to tonight's show.
Oh.
Then we got another one here that says, constantly thinking about and applying the truth shared on the program. Grace has made all the difference. Grace is the filter. This is from little Stacy Skierski.
Oh, I like Stacy. She's in Live Oak, California. Stacy, her husband, and I think they have...
I've been to Live Oak.
Two kids.
There used to be a high school in Live Oak, and their colors, the high school colors were kind of like green and white, I think. Well, I guess if she's married, she's not little Stacy Skierski, is she?
Yeah, Stacy, say hi to Pastor Darren and Laura for me.
We got an email 9 minutes ago. It says, hi, Jim, BJ Ranger, and the listeners. I joined the show a few months ago. Sorry to be off topic. Yeah, like, we're never off topic. But I wanted to ask you a question. Please, by listening to you, I have come to recognize the presence of grace. Acknowledge and thank grace for it. From what I understand from past shows is that this does not mean I am connected. Could you please give examples of how you define connected? Thanks so much, Marina. Jim?
Yeah, well, being connected is where God starts to become real to you in your life. And this is one of the reasons why we've taken the road and of helping people to say, if God's grace is everywhere and God's doing, like you heard just a few moments ago, the beauty of being able to see. In fact, what you said, I thought immediately of this this dove that was flying the other day, and there's no way in the world I didn't hit this dove. And you know how a dove can really, they move their shoulders really well.
Yeah.
There's no way in the world that I didn't miss this dove. But somehow that thing caught enough air right at the very last second. And it's not like I was trying to, it's just I'm going fast, you know. And it caught just enough air and it just darted off. And again, that's like, thank you, grace. That's God's grace.
Well,
so in the same way that we see the smallest of little things, and you begin to identify that God's with you, a connection for me becomes the more real that God is.
I think, looking from the perspective of the bird.
Yes.
Why are you smiling and chuckling?
Because I can see it coming.
I think what happened was The bird said, there's a lot of traffic here, I might die. And then all of a sudden said, oh my God, there's no way in heaven or earth I'm going to be killed by this ugly little yellow car.
Oh, well, actually it was
and
the...
And dodged the bullet.
It was the family with the SUV going to
Louisiana. In Louisiana.
So
I like my story better.
Yeah, you know what? That reminds me of a guy that took about three of my stories. He combined them all together, and he told this whopper of a story. Well, Jim Hockaday, when he did this, this happened, and this person got healed. I said, you just took three of my stories and put them together. And he looked at me and goes, I like mine better. So it sounds just like that. Any more?
Yeah, we got another one here.
Well, you know, the emails are coming. Is there any text message?
We haven't had one single text message. Where's my machine?
Wow.
I don't know. Let me check.
Is it working?
Hold on.
While you're doing that, let me say that tomorrow night at 7 o'clock again at the library, this is, for those of you that are in town, it's the Hardesty Library right there at 93rd and Memorial, right behind the Mercedes dealership. There's a nice library. We will be meeting in the Buchan room. We meet in a different room usually. But anyhow, we'll be meeting at 7 o'clock, and it only goes till 8 o'clock, so we get you out on time. And it's a series called What is Reality? Taking the information that we get actually from the show and the things that we do here and putting it into an hour's worth of teaching and sharing, and people are receiving some wonderful things happening to them. If you'd like to receive this, but you're not here in town to come, you can go to jimhockaday.com and go to the page that says live streaming, and you just click on that, and you'll be able to actually look in and watch us and listen, and you'll be a part of what's going on tomorrow night. So,
well, I sent a text, and it didn't show up on the screen here in the barn, but I got Ranger's text back. You send a text.
Okay.
Somebody send a text to the show. The first word you type is grace, and then just type a message, and then when you press the send button, you send it to 69302. But we haven't received any emails where someone said the text messaging isn't working, because we would have read them on the show. But I don't know. The text company is always changing things. Maybe the reason my text isn't showing up is because I've already sent. I'm sending the same text over again. We got another email that came in 9 minutes ago. Excuse me. The cast lots in the book of Acts and took it as God's will. They cast lots. Do you know what he's saying?
Yeah. Casting lots. Wait a second. What did I just get back here? Alert and message service. It was not a valid keyword.
Grace?
Yeah, ranch text. Voting, response, or command. Check your spelling. Okay, let me try that again. And the shortcut number to send it to. Okay, wait a minute. Wait.
Did you do something wrong?
No, I sent it to the right place. Grace, and then my message.
All right, well, hold on. Let me go back here and... let's see. Maybe there's something going on. But
I put okay. Box stall broadcasting. Ranger here. Have a blessed life. So I got it back. I'm good.
All right.
Did it come through?
I'm checking now because I backed out of the. I backed out into the technical stuff.
They cast lots. They put out. It's kind of like almost betting to see what God's going to have you to do. No, that's not the.
Holy cow!
What?
We've got buckets of texting. They just showed up all of a sudden when I refreshed the screen.
Oh well, cool.
All right, so okay, we got an email here. Let's see. Oh, we got one here from Little Stacy Skierski. Ha 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 ha! BJ, you are correct. Suwannee High School's colors are green and white. Go Bulldogs, by the way. I'm still little, just 5 feet tall. Ha ha. So, now we're going, this memory of this high school color in Live Oak.
Yeah.
Do you know what year I was there to see a Live Oak basketball game?
No idea.
Before they kicked me out of the ball game. 1975. Well, okay. You know me and you know.
Right. So, memory, 40, so 40 years ago.
40 years ago. Okay, we've got some text messages here, folks. It seems to be working. Okay, it says, how about doing a show with a live audience for the 200th show? Well, we're live. Rangers
well,
here.
Actually, we were thinking of actually just putting on a bunch of the show's favorite music.
And then, sound effects.
And sound effects. And then BJ and I would just go paint the town red, you know?
I thought we could go glow bowling, where you go to a bowling alley after dark and all the lights are out. And
yeah.
The pins and the balls glow in the dark.
I've done that before.
I've never done that. It said, here we got another text. It says, hello, I'm new to the show. Have you enjoyed what I have enjoyed what I've heard? Have you talked about these end times we are living in on previous shows? I'm really, oh, and then it got cut off. Because text messages can only be so long.
That's in response to, remember when you made some comments about
zombie apocalypse, yeah, end of times?
There you go, yeah.
No, that's actually the first we've ever brought it up.
Yeah.
It says, speaking of snacks, how do you handle being told no sugar or cheese, etc., if you want healing? Well, that person's an idiot.
I would eat all the cheese and
yeah.
I could find.
Yeah, cheese is good. Oh, here we go. A cat. Somebody wants to know how old a cat is that's 1.5 years old, 2 people years. You don't have a cat, do you? Mm-hmm. Do you ever get cats in your backyard since you're in town?
Yeah. Well, you know, we live back right up to the horse ranch.
So we
get barn cats to come over.
A cat that is about 1.5 years old is going to be around 20 years, 19 to 20 years of age. So a 1.5-year-old cat is like about a person. So in other words, another 6 months to a year when your cat's 2 years of age, you can take it into bars. It can legally drink.
Well, and that helps, I'm sure.
Yeah, and well, I think so. And also, your cat is old enough. It's 1.5 years old in people years. It's 18 to 20 years old. So your cat can vote in the next presidential election. We had somebody that sent in a test. It says, hi, test. Another hi. We had a text message that said, excellent show. Ranger, what's happening? Somebody sent Ranger a text.
That was me.
And then, oh, it was? And then we had a text that says, is the texting working? It is. And then someone sent a text that says, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so the texts are now working, folks. So make sure you send some. Let's see here. It says, BJ, you don't ask the guys about business decisions or if you're in a tough spot. Ask for help or anything? What in the world do you guys talk about? We're baling hay this week. It's the first opportunity we've had because we've had a lot of rain like other places in the Midwest. We're going to be baling hay, cutting hay tomorrow, and we'll start making small square bales Friday after the dew burns off in the morning. The only thing I said to the guys is you know how important this harvest is. Make it better than last year. I appreciate nobody getting hurt. I'm glad we're not even going to have a flat tire. And you guys really have a lot of power. So why don't you just put a pair of gloves on and pitch in and help put hay in the barn. Thanks a lot. That was my prayer this morning when I woke up. About the next week, baling hay, that's it. I don't worry about business. I don't worry about money. I could care less what time. Jim will tell you I don't even wear a watch. Jim will actually tell you that there's been national news stories that I'm clueless to because I don't watch the news.
Right.
A lot of times I don't even know there's bad weather till tornado sirens go off in town. You just don't care. The conversations I have with the guys, with all due respect, that's nobody's business but my own.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tried to tell me about your conversations with the guys, I would say, don't tell me. Keep your lips sealed and just enjoy the time. Because it's a very deep, personal, rich relationship, and it's meant to be that way. Scripture backs it up when you pray, which is asking questions or asking for grace to help you. Jim, what does Scripture say? Go in your room and...
Sure. Close the door.
And be in private, and
right.
Your Father will answer you in private.
Yeah, I think one of the real keys about God's continual help and assistance in what you're doing is just what you mentioned, which is you don't have care. You're not stressed. You take somebody that is so stressed about all their choices and their decisions concerning business, and they allow themselves to be anxious, and it's affecting them. Then what is, if you boil it down, what is the effect that's taking place? But you making those business decisions so important that they're more important than your peace and the joy that you're having enjoying God's wonderful assistance and help with you all day long. So think of what happens when you begin to just do what? You live every day without care, without concern. Why wouldn't God then take the concern for you? You remember, it does say over in Peter, cast your care upon the Lord, for he cares for you. When you don't have care, guess who's taking up the care?
Right.
Grace is. And that's where you can be really more in a flow, if you want to say, or more accurate in doing things like God would do it than if you're stressing out trying to get God to help you.
Yeah. We got a text that says, Jim and BJ, thanks for responding to my email. I got it. And it says, Roman, Pasco, Washington.
Good.
So we got another text that came in. We got an email here that says, Jim and BJ and Ranger, good stuff all around. Keep sharing. Are you going to talk about last week's homework assignment? Angela K., do you remember last week's homework assignment? You got to look it up.
Yeah, I remember it now.
I was wanting for someone to bring up the homework assignment. I guess we got another email here that
came. You're timing your routines.
Timing your routines. How much time does it take you to do things?
Yep.
We're going to talk about that after we read these emails. We got an email that came in 6 minutes ago. Great show tonight. Here's to 199 more.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, great.
Oh, gee.
I thought this sentence was over.
I know. I thought we could
thought maybe good behavior, time served.
I know. That's what I was thinking. We could bow out at 200 and just hit the road.
Maybe just that the 200th show, all we do is log on at 8 o'clock and say, hey, take care.
That's right.
See you in heaven or hell.
Have maybe about 15 different ways to say goodbye.
Yep. Auf Wiedersehen for Fred in Germany.
For Fred, and adios, and ciao for Italian, and goodbye for English. And
it says, I think I speak for all the listeners that we hope you guys put up with Oklahoma through Jade Helm, a zombie apocalypses, currency crash, or whatever might be happening in the next little while. Shout out to Mulligan Tim. Congratulations to Joe in Hickory for his recent grace-based increase. All the best, Breakfast Ed.
Hey, Breakfast Ed.
So, yeah, everybody's got to say hi to Breakfast Ed. And so, yeah, got to watch out for those zombies. Okay, we are, let me refresh. We're caught up on emails. Let me refresh this. I've never had to do this before, but I remember now the texting company sent me an email last week saying they were upgrading their services because we don't use hardly any of the stuff that they have. And so I'm wondering if this is it, how you've got to refresh now. Hmm. Okay, last week's homework assignment was to calculate how long you spend getting ready in the morning, brushing your teeth, taking a shower, making a bed, get dressed, eating, and then calculate that time on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, and then a yearly basis, and see how many hours and days of your life are possibly wasted that you wish you had? I mean, if you spend an hour and a half getting ready every morning, and you take an hour and a half times 365 days, that's weeks of your life that perhaps you wish you were doing something else.
Right. Almost 500
yeah,
days.
500 days. Over a year.
Mm.
The point of the homework assignment was to for you to start to see the perspective of tonight's topic that maybe we'll get back to eventually. That I don't know if the right word is wasted or discarded or unimportant or a bad choice. However you want to put it is fine with Jim, I, and Ranger. With Jim, me, and Ranger. Excuse me. The point is, you can always get more money, you can always get more friends, you can always develop a new family, you can always find some place to live. You may not like it, it may not be as nice or as clean as you have now or as safe, but there's always more. But the only thing that you do not have more of is seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, and months. Now, back to tonight's topic when we talked about people that have had catastrophic health issues, near-death experiences, surgeries, incarcerations, something that has literally taken their reality away, and it's never coming back. They see the futility, the wasted time, how really unimportant it was. It's kind of like the old adage that I like to use, that you were in school and they told you you wouldn't graduate unless you did this extra credit assignment, and it was a big deal, and your mom and dad fought over it, and you did this extra credit assignment, and it was like your life was over unless you got an A on it, and it was the biggest major thing in your life. And 6 months after you graduate high school, you'd have to see videos, photographs, and witness testimony to the fact that it ever even occurred. That at the time, there's flat ground that's made into mountains. Not molehills, kitchen table flat ground that the world and the flesh and the pressure and our egos and our minds build into great Teton peaks. That in reality never was nothing but table flat ground.
Hmm.
So that's the purpose of the homework assignment, is to give you a benchmark that how important is it. I tell people all the time, since I'm paralyzed, I don't say this is a waste of time or I got better things to do. I literally say, you're wasting my life. And they go, what? And I says, I don't know when I'm going to die. I'm wasting my life. I could care less about this. And they just go, oh, well, boy, that's harsh.
Mm-hmm.
But look at my perspective. I'm not worried about the time of day or about money. I'm worried about wasting my life on something unimportant that doesn't matter. So perhaps take tonight's topic, last week's homework assignment, what Jim and I right now are telling you, and use that to choose more correctly on a spiritual basis.
This is some good scripture here that really helps to highlight this. Over in Luke chapter 19, there's a story here of a master that had was going on a trip, and he gave one of his servants $5, $5 denarii. He gave another one $2, and he gave another one $1, and encouraged them to do something with it. And the one who had $5 made another $5. The one that had $2 made another $2, and the one that had $1 just buried it in the sand. Well, when he found out what he did, he said to the one that buried it, because he praised the two that actually made or doubled their money. When he found out that the one buried what he had, He said, "You're right that I don't suffer fools gladly, and you've acted the fool. Why didn't you at least invest the money in securities so I would have gotten a little interest on it?" Then he said to those standing there, "Take that money from him and give it to the servant whom doubled my stake." They said, "But master, he's already has double." And he said, this is interesting, he said, "That's what I mean. Risk your life and you get more than you've ever dreamed of. Play it safe and you end up holding the bag." Well, BJ, that little statement right there really kind of ties in a lot with what we're talking about tonight. He's saying here that his life represents this guy's reality. You have to risk your reality. You have to dare that there's something more. In other words, while we were talking even about those small little choices of making a connection every day, that grace is there and people that were having habits, just let every little choice you make be identified with God and his ability, his help is with me. I'm never going back. I'm never going back into that bondage. Well, notice what he said. Play it safe and end up holding the bag. That's pretty much where most people are at. They don't want to let go of the world that they know. And that's part of what, you know, we really, when we talk a lot about some of the end times stuff and things right. that could be happening in our day. And
before certain, the show starts.
Certain crisis that exist all around us. That's yeah. one of the things that you've really emphasized to me, and I got it. It didn't take yeah. long to get it, is if a crisis appeared and you're not willing to change the reality that you know.
Right.
You pretty much will handicap yourself
yeah.
by trying to have the world that you've always had, and most likely you'll endanger your life.
As you well know, I used to give lectures and instruct groups of people on catastrophic survival techniques, what to do when it hits the fan, wherever you are.
Right.
And I used to start all my classes out with saying this, the two biggest groups that die the quickest and have the least mathematical odds of surviving a catastrophic incident are two groups that I like to call, I want things as they are, the way it was yesterday.
Right.
And the other group that are quick to die, I call the Daniel Boone group. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which, in other words, is both extreme swings of the survival pendulum. You have this group that wants to, they want to cling to yesterday.
Right.
They want the central heating and air conditioning. They want the toilets to flush. They want to be able to go to the store and buy things. They don't want danger. They don't want National Guard. They don't want to have to sleep on the ground. They don't want mosquito bites. They've got hay fever. They don't want to go without sunglasses. They don't want to have to forage for food. They never drink water, just pop and juice. They literally are so entrenched in their day-to-day lives that when the rug is pulled out from under them, they will spend every emotion and waking minute trying to hold on to with a death grip, or to duplicate, try to get back to what mm-hmm. yesterday was.
Right.
They can't wrap their minds around the fact that was yesterday, this is today, life as you know it is over. The other group that dies very quickly, actually, which doesn't make any sense, is the Daniel Boone group. These are the people that think that their home is a fort and they can defend it from everybody, that they're going to live off of the land, hunt, fish, and trap, and that they've got camping skills and they're going to be just fine. They're overconfident. Hmm. And in reality, they don't have the proper training or mindset. And so you have the two extremes. Somebody that can't deal with reality and they want to go back in time one day before right. it hit the fan. And then you have the other extreme, the one that thinks that they're Daniel Boone and that they can survive all, do all, and
sure.
and have everything. And so those are the two groups that perish the quickest and are in the most danger.
Right. Interesting.
And, yeah. I mean, I've been prepared now for almost 30 years, and I have not one single stitch of camouflage clothing.
Hmm.
Nothing. I have no camouflage clothing whatsoever. It serves no purpose.
Hmm.
And the reason, and just give people a simple safety tip. If you think camouflage clothing is going to save your life, think about it for a second. They're close enough so where they can discern the shape of a body. It's too late.
Mm-hmm.
If camouflage clothing is going to save your life, whatever you're trying to avoid, the danger, it's too close.
Mm.
It's too late for sure. Camouflage clothing.
Sure. Sure.
The point is you should be. You could have a blinking light on your head, be wearing a bumblebee yellow jumpsuit, and feel perfectly content to start a fire. That is a safe place to camp. But if you know,
sure.
they don't look at it from a big perspective.
Right.
We got an email. It says, I like those scriptures.
Yeah.
What was that? Were those out of the Bible?
Yeah. They were.
It says, the broken china plate example used in last week's Wednesday service was very helpful for me, Chris. Well, what was that? What's the broken china plate example?
Oh, just...
Do you care to share with the rest of the class?
Yeah. I mean, I had a older friend that just shared it to me like this. He said, you know, sin and letting go of things, bad choices, sinful things, he said it's like a china plate. When you drop it, it shatters.
Yeah.
And he said that's how you have to look at something that's not helping you, is drop it, let it shatter, it's gone forever, now go on and leave it alone. It's over.
Yeah.
And it's the mindset, again, the perspective. As long as you feel like you can hold on to it for some reason, you will.
Yeah.
When you recognize that it's gone forever, that's when your heart can let go, and that's when grace takes over.
I think the true measurement of a person, a man or a woman, not a child, but a man or a woman, to truly have character, you have to have regrets. You have to have recollection and memory of bad choices that either you hurt yourself or someone else. And you come to terms with it and you've accepted it. It's not a cross to bear, but you realize that you don't want to be in that position. And the actions and the choices that put you in that position to hurt yourself or someone else, you will never duplicate.
Hmm.
That you see the folly, the true folly and ridiculousness in what you think is important and the value of it. That morals, principles, and values really only have something tangible and powerful when it is way past inconvenient. That you have to compromise and sacrifice to stand behind those morals, values, and mm-hmm. principles.
Mm-hmm.
Until you're in those positions, I really don't think you can have a code honor or any type of character. I think that trial by fire and surviving.
Yeah, but then look at how wicked our day is becoming. It's like we're literally in a fire. And we have opportunity all the time for rising up in this type of code.
Well,
we?
The scripture and grace and the message, especially the message of Genesis and the book of Revelation, is exactly that. To point out that on your best day,
yes.
your best day as a human being on this planet is still not as good as a relationship with Christ.
Right.
That the best day in your life, the best day on this planet, is nothing in the eyes of the guys.
Yeah.
It is literally wasted time.
Yeah. You know, remember that chapter, I've preached about it before and talked about it before, chapter 11 of Hebrews, which they call the faith chapter. It's where all the stories come, where it says, by faith, Enoch, he found God, and Noah, he built a boat, and Abraham and Sarah and Moses and on, King David. And it gives all these great testimonies of these individuals who had that character and out of adversity trusted God. Well, at the end of it and the start of the next chapter, it says, therefore, meaning because of chapter 11, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, all those individuals that are witness to what God's grace can do, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Look at what it says here. In order to run, it says, lay aside the weight and the sin that so easily ensnares you. I mean, that's kind of what we're sharing tonight. I mean, it's really letting go of that false sense of reality.
Yeah. There's really someone in the Bible named Enoch?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. He walked with God for 300 years and then he just stepped over.
There was a television.
He didn't die.
There was a television series on HBO that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
About gangsters and prohibition and selling whiskey. And it took place in Atlantic City.
Okay.
And it was called Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
And it was based on true characters, how Al Capone got started.
Right.
And, well, the guy that ran Atlantic City was, I mean, they based it on real people. His name was Enoch Thompson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they called him Nucky Thompson.
Huh.
It was called Boardwalk Empire. It was a HBO TV series a couple years ago.
So Capone got started down there?
Yeah, Capone actually started working in a cat house as a bouncer and bartender. And eventually killed his boss. Well, you know, to move up the ladder.
Right.
But, yeah. And something else I didn't know, that Al Capone had a son. I didn't know that. And Al Capone's son was deaf. He couldn't hear. But Showtime and HBO have a really excellent way of taking factual American history and turning it into good programming. I mean, there was a show about Wild Bill Hickok and Black Hills Gold called Deadwood.
Uh-huh.
That was spot on. I mean, it was amazing the education that actors had to go through. Then there's, you know, Band of Brothers miniseries about, you know, paratroopers in Europe.
So was that up in the Black Hills?
Yeah, Deadwood, South Dakota.
Okay.
And how it got started, how corrupt it was, and yeah. Yeah.
Some pretty tough characters, huh?
Soon as they win all the awards and they've told the story about the time, they ditch the show, which usually takes about 2 or 3 years, and then it's gone. And then they come out with a new factual, historically based, correct television series. Just when you're hooked and it becomes one of your favorites, then they just say,
it's gone. See you later.
Yeah, we don't care, BJ. Find something else to do with your time. That The book of Genesis, I mean, I can't stress enough. The book of Genesis does, I mean, come on, it's the first book. Think of it. Out of all the Dead Sea Scrolls, out of all the scriptures, out of all the things that were written, that one always comes first. There's a very powerful message from the guys. It's the first book, the one book that they figure everybody might get through. The start of everything. The main text of the book of Genesis isn't that the guys, you know, took a pizza break on the seventh day. It's about how the reality, the perspective, the choices that Adam and Eve would face as punishment for going against the word of God. Think about that. What choices did they have to worry about? What choices were they concerned with? What happened if they would have made a choice in the Garden of Eden? It all would have turned out great. But fast forward after the apple, look at the choices that were faced.
Yeah.
Look at their reality had changed. Look at how Adam and Eve now were focused on themselves and each other and not the Word of God. So compare what is important. Compare your reality. Compare what you think to be tangible and true. Is it closer to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden? Or is it closer to Adam and Eve outside the Garden of Eden? And obviously, it's outside the Garden of Eden for all of us. Which means that there's nothing good of the flesh.
Yeah, right.
There's nothing good of the world. And that we're spirit beings encapsulated in a human body. Which means perspective and choice and prioritizing what's important. Did that make sense?
Good.
Oh, we just got a text. BJ, do you see really bad times coming to the USA? Thanks. Do I see really bad times coming to the United States of America?
Well, we're already seeing them.
We've been in bad times since about 1975. Yeah. We're in bad times.
The increase of technology.
And think about this. I don't want to dwell on this, but I mean, I want you to give. I mean, it's a text message. We want to respect somebody's thoughts.
Okay.
And also, I want to give people something quick to think about. Just go back one generation, where it was an anomaly. It was weird. I mean, it was a birthday. The electricity was out. The water was shut off, or you were celebrating, but very rarely did a family go out to eat in a restaurant. There was always home-cooked meals. Supper was at a certain time. Everybody shared breakfast and supper. Dinner, well, everybody was on their own for lunch. There was always a big Sunday meal. The family was spent more time together. Children played outside. You always knew everybody on your street. And everybody was Mr. Jones and Mrs. Jones. And there was nothing wrong with a child who had made mistakes at school that would get a SWAT from the principal. People didn't sue each other at the drop of a hat. If somebody ran into a car, they would wait for the person to come out and they'd say, I dented your car. You'd see wallets, luggage, checkbooks, purses in cars with the windows rolled down. People didn't lock their houses because what if somebody was sick or they were thirsty or there was an emergency and they needed to get in your home to use the telephone? It wasn't many generations ago that described the overwhelming majority of the United States of America. Technology, microwave ovens have replaced home-cooked food. Emails, texting, Twitter, Facebook have replaced telling someone face-to-face that you're upset with them. Twitter, Facebook, emails, and text messaging has replaced a hug and an eye-to-eye, I love you. It used to be that everything was created, built, paid for, and the profits were turned back into the economy in this country. It wasn't outsourced to India, Japan, or South America. So when you say, are we really in bad times? It's been getting worse every year and every decade. So I don't know. And by the way, have a nice night.
Yeah, right.
Just painted a rosy picture, but I mean, and by the way, may not be Jim's views or perspective. That's myself and my dog Ranger. But you ask, BJ, do you see really bad times coming to the USA? They're already here.
Right.
We are not first in jobs or literacy. We're first in putting people in jail.
We're first in over-the-counter drug consumption.
Yeah, this will give you an idea. Okay, there's plus or minus, ladies and gentlemen, there's about 200 countries on the face of the planet. I say plus or minus because there's always a military coup overthrowing somewhere. So there's 200 countries on the face of the planet. 200 countries. Out of all the billions of people on the face of the planet, the 300 million that live sea to shining sea, United States of America citizens, we consume 80% of the world's total prescription pills.
That's right.
Out of 200 countries, out of billions of people, 300 American citizens consume every day 80% of the pharmaceuticals from all over the planet. And we're supposed to be one of the biggest godly Christian countries there is. So much for the healing powers of grace.
Right.
That's even more depressing. You got to bail us out of this because I just threw a refrigerator out of an airplane to the show.
Yeah, that's okay. I get it. I'll give you a scripture that'll help you.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
And it doesn't really help in a sense, but it is very accurate. Jesus was talking to Nicodemus. He said, you're a respected teacher of Israel and you don't know these basics. Listen carefully. I'm speaking sober truth to you. I speak only of what I know by experience. I give witness only to what I've seen with my own eyes. There is nothing secondhand here, no hearsay. Yet instead of facing the evidence and accepting it, you procrastinate with questions. If I tell you things that are as plain as the hand before your face and you don't believe me, what use is there in telling you of things you can't see, the things of God? So I brought that up just to say, isn't it interesting how so many are in a fog concerning the things that they do see?
Yeah.
Then what type of literal blindedness do you think that there possibly is spiritually? So when we hear these kind of things, some of BJ's thoughts here just a second ago, and you begin to put some of these pieces together. I mean, there's people right now that would listen to that and say, you know, that's just a bunch of hogwash. He's just, you know, he's just radical. He's out there. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, we're going to be sipping on our iced tea, swimming in a pool when Jesus comes to get us. You know, the point is, folks, is to wake us up to the things that are around us. Because if we clue into the things that are around us, don't you think it's possible to actually have a connection with Christ himself?
One of the reasons nobody likes us, including our allies, is that when it comes to civilizations and societies, we're still in diapers. The United States of America hasn't even been around 300 years. And you look at Eastern, Asian, Middle Eastern,
right.
Western Europe countries. Look at England.
Right.
There are so many countries on the face of the planet that are literally
thousands
that have been around for centuries.
Yep.
They've had so many different governments, so many different leaders, so many societal changes that we're at a point now with technology. They look at the United States of America and they think we're very naive and childlike. They literally it would be like me at my age, and there's a 12-year-old that's trying to work with horses and run a ranch and thinks that they are on the same level as me or better than me. I would say, kid, you haven't even been alive long enough.
Right.
You're clueless as to what's going to happen. And so I'm never surprised when a foreign country that is,
they vocalize they don't like us.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah, right.
they say, well, let's see, we've been around for 1,000 years. We've gone through this, we've gone through that, we've been through this. You've never even experienced that. Well, let's see, you've had one Revolutionary War and you've had one Civil War. And you think you're all grown up?
Mm-hmm.
They look at us like we're child. And we act like spoiled children as a country around the world. I'm never surprised when somebody says, I hate Americans or I hate this country. I mean, if you come from a country that is old and has been there, done that, and has a whole closet full of T-shirts from right. past history.
Experiences.
Well, why would you look at such a young country and think anything but you have a lot of learning, a lot of growing to do?
And if you think about it, I mean, the things that we've accomplished in the time that we have has been the favor of God. So we're still at that place, folks, to experience Him even more, and that's what this show is all about.
I know one thing. I know that a country has to be about the citizens. A country is more than just
right.
a flag.
Yep, it is.
I mean, it has to be. There has to be more to a civilization and a society than a piece of fabric. It's great that it represents and that it's a marker of
a reminder.
A reminder, but it has to be, there has to be more substance
mm-hmm.
than a flag. It just has to be.
Well, I think that's what people are beginning to find out again, that it's time to put that together. And I believe that there's a parallel with spiritual things, because right now in the places that people call churches and where people go, I think there's a real strong heart desire to say, we want something that's real. We're tired of just spinning our wheels, saying things, doing things according to structure, and not seeing the results that we know we should be seeing. So I think there's a real parallel today, both spiritually and of the earth.
I agree, but I think that someone has to be very strong and very brave and have a real hunger for grace. Because right now in this country, and not this country, in the world, to stand up and be counted and recognized, and to look organized religion in the eye and say, where's the productivity? Where's the growth? Mm-hmm. Where's the grace?
Right.
Where is something that I can put in my hands that's tangible, that there is even a God? Where is it after all this time?
Right.
To do that, you gotta be strong.
Yeah.
You have to really have an inner core desire for righteousness and grace. Because otherwise, you may feel that way or think that way, but you're going to be sitting in a chair in a room with hundreds of people, and you're going to say, I'll look like an idiot. They'll kick me out. They'll ask
right.
me to leave. And how could I be right, and how could all these people be wrong? And what did I tell you before the show? I said it's kind of interesting that there's measurements for heaven.
Right.
And there's no measurements for hell.
Right.
And I said, if you like wide open spaces, you might want to go to hell. And if you like to meet people and you like to be around a lot of people, you might want to go to hell. Because heaven doesn't seem to be
As populated as
hell's going to be.
You know, Jesus made a comment. I think we're getting close to the end of the show tonight, but I'll say this. In John 5:41, Message Bible, Jesus said, I'm not interested in crowd approval. So just what BJ talked about. He was interested in what? Holding up a standard, which means you're going to have to go against a crowd. And he said, and did you know why? Because I know you and your crowds. I know that love, especially God's love, is not on your working agenda. I came with the authority of my Father, and you either dismiss me or avoid me. If another came acting so self-important, you would welcome him with open arms. How do you expect to get anywhere with God when you spend all your time jockeying for position with each other, ranking your rivals and ignoring God? Well, that's a good description right there about what it's going to take. What's that?
I got an idea.
Okay.
But since it's your show and your name is on it, before I say it on the air, I want to ask you a question. Okay, folks, what you're going to do right now is you're going to, there's not going to be dead air, but what I'm going to do for about 10 to 15 seconds is I'm going to turn the mics off. But don't worry, you're going to hear one of Jim's favorite songs because I'm going to ask Jim something off the air before I say it on the air. All right, okay? All right. I got to get rid of that. That's driving me nuts. See, I told you it wasn't going to be very long.
Well, I told you. Maybe next week people could pick a new song.
Pick a new song. See, that wasn't very long, folks. That didn't hurt too bad, did it? I just, like I said, out of respect for Jim, I wanted to ask. Okay, here's what we're going to do. You may want to spread the word. You might want to send some text messages and emails out. You might want to Twitter or Facebook or whatever other electronic ridiculous device you use on a regular basis. But we've never done this in the history of the show. We've actually never really talked about doing it because we're not sure what's going to happen. But something that you don't know is we've got 800 numbers. We've got toll-free numbers and a switchboard. And we are technologically capable of taking telephone calls on the air during the show, just like every other talk radio. Actually, it's because of my show on Sunday nights, Talking About Horses, where I've been answering telephone calls for, well, I'm coming up on my, think of this, 17 years. I've been doing my radio show about horses. It'll be 17 years in August. That's a long time to be talking about horses. But next week for the 200th radio show, a way of celebrating and thanking you for listening is we're going to take phone calls. Maybe you'll hear what Breakfast Ed sounds like. Maybe we'll hear from the Weaver kids.
Hey, that'd be great.
Maybe we'll actually hear what Grandma and Grandpa sound like. Who knows? Maybe we'll hear from little Stacy Skierski, who is, what'd she say she was, 4 foot five?
No, she's 5 foot.
5 foot. 5 foot. Doesn't Subway make a sandwich that's 5 feet long?
You know, I don't know.
No, that's not hilarious. Right. It's $5 for a foot long sandwich.
Foot long. There you go.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stacy. I got mixed up. I thought you got a 5 foot sandwich, but no, it's a $5 foot long. Well, I was close.
Yeah, sure.
She's probably not going to listen since I just compared her to a Subway sandwich. But next week, we're going to open up the 800 number so that you can say hello and hi. And remember, there may be more than one person that wants to be on the show, so we're going to keep the calls short.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be an interesting show.
Let's go for it.
I don't know if we'll get any.
I don't know.
I don't know. But that's what that little break was, is I thought I came up with that idea. You ready to say something to music?
Sure.
All right, here we go.
Well, thanks for being with us again tonight, and I certainly trust all of you are beginning to really get a hold of how easy it is, if you're not really protecting your own heart, to just slip right into the way the world thinks and think that life on the world's terms is really wonderful. But it only takes coming to the end of your road when there's a crisis to realize that the real help comes from God. So tonight, I just pray for each one of you that your eyes will be open, that you'll really see and your heart will be open to really see how important it is to take one step after another step, put your faith and your trust and bet your life on God. Kind of like that one scripture that I said over there in the distilled translation of Hebrews 11:1, faith is betting your life on the unseen realities of God. Have a great week. Experience God. And don't just experience Him by seeing the things that are around you. Let God touch your bodies It's time for all these sicknesses to end. It's time for these different situations and crises to be over, not to carry them with us, but to just let God be God in your life. We'll see you next week.
Well, that was a pretty good one. Well, that was certainly better music than the first music
was.
Yeah. Okay, tomorrow night, which is the 15th,
right?
Hardesty Library.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Starts at 7 o'clock Central Time. And how do they log on to see and watch you?
Just jimhockaday.com is the easiest.
Jim, www.jimhockaday.com.
Yep,
easy. And just follow the prompts and instructions.
Yep.
And you can watch and listen.
Yeah, you can.
Are those ever going to be archived?
You know,
we haven't talked about that in a long time.
No, we haven't.
And is that a big deal technologically wise?
It's just that there's quite a few of them that the quality is not, I don't know. I mean, it's not, okay, put it this way. We could archive easily the audio.
Right.
But when we first started, a lot of the video just wasn't totally up to speed. You know?
Oh.
So I don't really know what to do. I mean, we could just start when it started getting better, which was probably about 4 months ago or so. But I don't know. I'm open for suggestions, but
well, you know what I think. I think it's a good idea of what you just said. I think the thing to do is to, if you have good audio, and you have them all, I think you just put the audio up there, mm-hmm. and then you just have a little asterisk
mm-hmm.
or some kind of a bullet point next, and say audio only,
mm-hmm.
and then finally. You stop with the little bullet point asterisk and say, finally, quality video. I think people would be more interested
I'll look into that.
In listening to them versus seeing them.
Yeah. Okay, I'll look into that.
Because I think somebody's going to be sitting in front of a computer screen, and they're going to be listening to you. They're going to be knitting, crocheting. They're going to be eating. They're going to be brushing their dog, polishing their shoes.
Well, you know,
whatever people do while they listen to something.
You can get it right here. I mean, I can pull it up right now.
On your machine?
Yeah, my phone.
So we'll have to explain that too. Next week, folks, the 200th show.
Yep.
We need some serious snacks next week.
Maybe somebody has an idea.
I do. I have an idea. I think we should kind of duplicate what we did last week.
Last week?
Yeah.
Pizza?
Pizza and chicken wings.
I'm going to do less pizza and more chicken wings.
More chicken wings.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah, and more paper towels. Maybe get some little wet naps or something.
Yep, those are good.
I had barbecue sauce on the letter P on one of my computers.
That's funny. That's real good.
I pressed P the next day, and my finger kind of didn't slide, and I go, why is the letter P sticky?
That's
so
real good.
I looked, and I thought, oh, well, that's honey barbecue sauce from Pizza Hut.
That's good.
On the letter P. All right, folks.
Where's Ranger?
She's right down here.
Did you have a tough day today?
Ranger, it was pretty hot. She was busy today. We're cleaning out the barn, making room for thousands of bales. Well, take care of yourself and your pets. Oh, Ranger. What is it? What do you want to say? What? She just literally woke up. She's been sleeping the whole show. All right, you're awake now. Dog spelled backwards. There we go. Well, folks, next week, 200 show. The 800 number will be open for telephone calls. You can say hi, goodbye, chew us out, or say whatever you want. And remember, in life, there's always time for a little grace. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Ranger? Now she's awake. Good night, everybody.